Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
ESNY.
Hey everybody, I'm Matt Castillo. Welcome into the Knicks State of Mind podcast, joined with Chip Murphy and Danny Small. And our special guest today, host of the Fast Break Layup at the NBA pod in the Strickland at Sam Gideon. Sam, thank you for joining us here today. As we talk a little bit about, we wanted to stay a little bit more out of the game recaps and talk a little bit more about some topics and things that are coming up. And obviously right now, one of the things with the Knicks, we're a little banged up at the forward position, the center position. We have Noel, who's had the back issue, tried to play yesterday. It was out two different stints, if I'm not mistaken, got hurt, left, and then came back in, got hurt again. And of course, Mitchell Robinson's banged up as well. So talk a little bit about what they could do rotational wise with their big men. And Danny, I'll start with you moving forward, whatever the stretch, whatever it could be, you know, as Mitchell Robinson is out with his injury. We now have Noel banged up. What do you see Coach Tibbs doing with this big man rotation?
Well, we can start with Sam. I mean, we get to hear my opinions every week. I think
we ramble on for no reason all the time.
If you give it to me to start, no one else will get to talk. So, Sam, what do you think, especially now we have Mitchell Robinson? He's dealing with that hip flexor strain, which can be definitely limiting, especially for a big explosive guy like him. What do you see Tibbs doing with the rotations if Noel and Mitch are banged up a little bit?
Well, first, thanks for having me, guys. It's always a pleasure to be on with fellow Knicks fans, you know, just talking NBA hoops and whatnot. As for Tibbs rotations, I've been pretty adamant on just like he needs to play Obi, and Obi's going to force his hand no matter what, because like Obi brings the energy. He brings all the types of plays that we need. Like whenever he's on the court, the Knicks are better. Like it's just like if you look at all the numbers, I saw something today earlier, the pace is like eighth in the league when he's on the court versus like when he's off the court, we're like 23rd or something like that. So he just changes the flow of the game, and he just like opens up so much stuff for us on both ends of the court, which is like something we didn't see last year. And I think Thibs kind of still has that mentality in his head. Like Obi's still fresh. He still needs to learn some things, but like we saw in the first like two or three games when he went small, like the offense was just like explosive. So Obi's going to force his hand no matter what, and he's just going to have to accept it at that point.
You saw that Obi's still on a short leash when he went small with Obi at center last night, or when they beat the Sixers. Even when they won, Obi made a couple, you know, not mistakes, but he got beat at the rim. He's not a rim protector, and Tibbs yanked him immediately. Once Drummond came in, Tibbs yanked him. But he's still got a short leash, but yeah, I think Tibbs is always going to be Tibbs, and he's always going to want as much rim protection on the floor as possible. But I mean, like you said, he's forcing his hand as much as, and now with the injuries mounting up, he may not have a choice to play Obi. Like, what's the other option? Is he really going to say, I'm going to play Jericho Sims over Obi? Because I can't imagine. Like, I like what I've seen from Jericho Sims so far, but I mean, Obi Toppin has proven that he's can help this team win. It's the eye test, and also the cleaning the glass on off stuff is ridiculous, and you just have to watch the guy. The plays he makes are winning plays.
He's like lately, and this isn't saying like he's not a talented player by any stretch, but he's helped the Knicks and he's played well just by playing hard. Like you guys said, the pace is up when he's on the floor. He just runs the floor. Guys are clearly like looking for him. And the other thing you guys kind of touched on a little bit with how Tibbs likes having that rim protector there. He likes going basically and just splitting the minutes between Robinson and Noel, and then Taj on a fill-in, even though Taj isn't quite the rim protector those guys are. But the way the Knicks are playing defense so far this year, they like to build it out from like protect the rim, protect the paint, and then fly out on shooters. They haven't been doing too well on closing out on shooters. So now that you don't have your two best rim protectors, might be the time to kind of, I don't want, you know, they're obviously not going to change their identity completely because Tibbs is Tibbs, like you said, Chip. But maybe if they kind of like change up the defense a little bit to go a little smaller, kind of try and get those closeouts on the shooters a little bit crisper, because if you don't have a rim protector to use, you can't play a defense that's predicated on having a strong guy in the middle. You do have to kind of adapt, and who knows how long these guys are going to be out for. Doesn't seem that they're major injuries, but it can't hurt to be a little flexible in how you use your personnel and how you throw your defensive schemes out there.
Yeah. And you know, just starting about some of the things that I love, and I tweeted this out yesterday during the game, and just I think Obi Toppin is a great example of just being how you, if you run the floor as hard as he does, I mean, you can get yourself 4 to 6, maybe even 8 points a game that way of just running the floor, playing with effort, which, you know, I know that my coaching hat might sound on a little bit here, you know, teaching young kids, that's the kind of stuff that you want them to see. You know, when you run the floor like that, look how successful it has made him, getting out in transition, out in the fast break, and getting himself some easy opportunities right at the rim. That aspect, absolutely love from Toppin. Now, I think as far as the rotation of what they're going to do with the big men moving forward for, you know, the foreseeable, you know, games that we have some of our big men out, it really depends on matchup. You know, that's really kind of, and I know that's obvious, but I'm just saying, like, Chip, you were talking about it, you know, when Toppin's in the game and they throw in Andre Drummond down there in the post, you know, Tibbs immediately grabs him out, pulls him out, puts Taj back in. And at the same time, though, yeah, I do love what I'm seeing from Toppin offensively, but to be honest, I understand why he's pulling him there. I mean, Drummond and Toppin in the post it would be a just massive mismatch and a tough, you know, job for Toppin to handle. So it kind of, I think, is going to depend on, you know, who's their forwards, who's their big, are they highly skilled or big body that can finish around the rim, create havoc that way. Will kind of depend on what they do rotational wise, and we may see Jericho Sims get a few more minutes there, kind of like early on, right? When Noel missed the first several games of the season, Sims did get a little bit of run there. And I agree, though, again with you, Chip, that he's very raw. Like, you know, I like things that I see about him. I feel like he probably needs to spend some time down in the G League, get more playing time, things like that. He can be a nice piece for us down the road. But you know, you might see him a little bit more right now, just like we've already seen earlier this season. I would like for Toppin to get more minutes during this stretch. I think it's an opportunity to kind of give him that time out there, give him a little bit of a leash. But the defensive aspect of it, certainly do understand a little bit, especially with some matchups. Like if somebody like Drummond's down in the post, I'm not feeling too good about Toppin being in that matchup. I think that's one he's going to lose quite a bit. Because you know, Drummond is a load. I mean, he's a big guy, big body, big hips. That's a tough guard for really anybody, you know, down there. So I understand why Tibbs went out there. Moving forward, though, like I said, certainly would like to see Toppin get a little bit more of an opportunity and maybe have his minutes jump up a little bit more. But it's going to depend on those matchup things. But can we just, you know, in want to give some appreciation to Taj Gibson, right? Like, yeah, the guy will go 2 weeks without even touching the floor, and then all of a sudden we have an injury and he has to kind of rush back out there and play, and always seems to give us productive minutes. Now, I always enjoy, like, when he's out there for a few minutes and he picks up 4 fouls like the first 8 minutes. He's just out there just throwing bodies. It's great things, but had to, you know, shout out Tosh Gibson, because he's one of the guys. I've always been a big fan of Tosh Gibson, even back in his early Bulls days. He was one guy I always got in fantasy. So I always love and appreciate the professionalism of being ready to play situations like this. He, you know, and I know he's a veteran, and you go, yeah, this is what you kind of expect. But, you know, it's not always easy to do that. You know, I don't think people realize how hard it is to be out of the rotation with these young guys playing, and then all of a sudden your number's called, you got to go back out there. And he always seems to be pretty damn, productive with the minutes that he gives.
He's got to be one of the best, like, third string centers in the league, yeah. Right? Like,
right.
Just, yeah, I mean, I know he's not a star anymore.
How many
like
third
that,
string but, centers are there in the league?
Well, I mean, I'm saying, yeah, I guess, like the Nets, it would be De'Ron Sharp, I guess. Like a lot of the teams don't even really have it.
Never,
like,
even heard of
Sims, yeah. Guy. Yeah, well, he's a rookie. He's okay. Like barely played, but
you know, that's I think the Lakers do, right? They have DeAndre Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
They could throw in there now. Like who don't the Lakers have?
I mean, take Taj over Jordan.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So would the Lakers if you
gave
them truth
lie detector test? Yeah.
You know, so the rotation is something that definitely.
I think just kind of touching on, I think we probably touched on the two like most popular sentiments among like Knicks fans and Knicks reporters and everyone in the Knicks universe. Obi needs more minutes, and Taj Gibson is
it's
awesome.
It's hard to be mad. It's hard to be mad when the guy taking the Obi minutes is Taj. Like, who? Mm-hmm. How can you be too mad? I guess he's the one taking the Obi minutes, or who are you going to take the minutes from? Are you going to take them from Taj? Cause you know, Taj isn't losing minutes, not on a Tibbs team. And he's playing really well. He always plays well. And when he plays well, they win, and he's not coming off the court. So the only other alternative, obviously you don't want Mitch coming off the court. So the other option is he's taking minutes from Nerlens Noel. And I don't know. I guess that's a more likely option than Taj not playing, but he's looked good since he came back from injury. I don't see it. Sam, what do you think?
I think Thibs has to be a little bit more flexible with like the rotations based on matchups per se. Cause like, I feel like he does the same thing no matter who the opponent is, rather than like having a set, like not having a set rotation for each different matchup, but like sort of like adjusting it. I know a main criticism of, I think, maybe Budenholzer over the years was like, he didn't like adjust. And I think that's good. That's what we're seeing with Thibs right now. And like, you have all this talent, you need to know how to use it, because I don't think Thibs has ever had a team this deep before. Like thinking back to Minnesota, I think they probably went like maybe like 8 deep. Even Chicago back then, he was forced to use his depth due to injury, but like it wasn't as deep as this Knicks team.
Right.
Like, even you could put in like rookies like Grimes or McBride, and they'll even give you some productive minutes. So like you could go like 12 deep with this Knicks team, and I don't think he's ever had that before. So I think it's a learning process with like all of it, with even the offense, the defense, Thibs. So hopefully it irons out over the course of the season. But so far it's like,
You know, and something else that's kind of brought up into this topic, kind of changing gears a little bit here. We're talking about the perimeter, right? And guys, having a bit of a field day on us from behind the arc. And, you know, like I said, I don't want to go into like a lot of game recaps because you already know. But say, I'm going to start with you on this. What the hell happened with Ricky Rubio? Like, what planet? Did we hit the damn Twilight Zone? Did that man hit 7 of 8 3-pointers? The last one he missed was just he threw up there for freaking fun.
Ricky Rubio's revenge, man. That's his revenge against Tibbs.
I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And it's Ricky Rubio's not the only one. He's not been the only one to have kind of a field day behind the arc. You know, Chip, your tweet, you literally had me laughing out loud when you said at this point Ben Simmons is going to come back and drain threes on us. But that's really kind of
– wasn't his first career three against the Knicks.
We're not going to talk about that. We're not talking about that. Yeah. You know, but – what is going on with this? You know, what do we need to adjust around the perimeter with these 3-point looks? Or is it just that's part of the damn NBA game? Everybody's hitting 3-pointers right now, but something seems to be a little bit off, you know, with our rotation around the perimeter, because guys are getting wide open looks. So what are some of the things that Nick's got to clean up? What's the difference from last year to this year?
I think the closeouts aren't as hard as they were last year. Last year, you saw guys more making more of an effort to close out on 3-point shooters. So, like, even if they were getting open looks, like, they were still somewhat a little bit more contested than they are now. Now, guys are just watching guys take threes. Like, you'll see Julius camped in the paint. You'll see Fournier and RJ looking at each other. Like, dudes just don't know where to go. So that's part of it. So I think they just, like, need to fix up the communication on the defense. As in terms of like switching, but like, I think one thing that fixes that is like when you go with Obi at the five, you could just switch everything and there's no miscommunication on closeouts or anything. Cause no one is like confused on who they need to go to. You just switch everything. And it's simple like that. Also, I think the point of attack defense is something that's just been really lacking. Our best point of attack defenders so far this year have been Quickly and probably Grimes. Grimes did like the best job on Rubio on Sunday, I believe it was. So, yeah, I just feel like those are the main components of the defense that, like,
the fact that someone had to do a best job on Rubio.
Like, that's an issue within itself.
Yeah.
But, and you mentioned it before, like, the Knicks, they did give up a decent amount of open looks last year. It was just, and anyone who wanted to, you know, take the Knicks down a peg last year would mention that and say, well, they gave up a ton of open looks. They were just lucky, which you kind of had to expect maybe like a little bit of a regression to the mean, but I think it's more so the, you know, the poor closeouts and the poor communications rather than, you know, just, oh, see, we, you know, see the Knicks last year was a fluke. I think there's, you know, something a little more to it than just saying, oh, it was a fluke. But yeah, I like the idea of going small with Obi. I mean, and it's at the point where Tibbs is almost, it's going to be forced to adjust to it.
Yeah. And, you know, Chip, I was not going to put you on the spot here, but I know you usually you have the numbers type thing. And if you could, at some point, if you could really quick, now I'm not putting you on the spot. I'm not asking for you right now. I promise I'm not doing this to you, but if you could, where are we ranked 3-point percentage right now? Or not 3-point percentage, but the 3 points that we're giving up. Where are we at?
Oh, that we're giving up
last year. Yeah,
defensively.
Yeah.
Do you know, Danny?
I was just looking at this the other day.
If somebody could find that, just to throw it back out there at some point, because I'm curious to see where we were last year compared to the start of this season.
Oh, we were much better last year.
Yeah, I just want to see how far back, because I just feel like everybody's hitting threes. Like, that was a problem even a few years ago where it just seemed like everybody was just having a field day because nobody was guarding around the perimeter. And then last year, the whole defense.
We're last in 3-point makes allowed.
Yeah. Okay.
And 23rd in opponents' 3-point percentage.
Okay. And I wonder how many teams, and I know the league is just shooting, you know, 3-pointers as part of the damn league, but I'm just wonder how many open looks or looks in general, because it just seems like it's not as sharp. And Sam, you kind of, I felt like hit the head, you know, for sure there with that explanation of it, of closeouts and miscommunication on some things, guys not in the right spot, certainly, you know, hurting us here in the early going, but I think eventually you start getting in that mid-season form type thing. You start cleaning some things up. That adjustment will kind of – that will take place, I believe. Now, one thing –
the backcourt is new. Like,
right.
Inserting two new starters, that right. happens. Even if it's veterans like Kemba and Fournier, I think they'll lean into it. It's a new defense, new coach, new guys they're playing with. I think they'll learn, and they're veterans, they're pros. They'll get used to it, and they'll be fine.
Right. And what I kind of like to do, and I don't know about y'all, but I look at about 10 games into the season, every 10 games or so, and kind of try to evaluate, you know, basically with the start of the season. Let's do this. First 10 games, I know we're 7-4, so actually 11 games in. Let's say Are you happy with where they're at? Just kind of where you expected them, or maybe even disappointed? We'll go around here, Sam. I'm going to start with you. 11 games in, overall, your mood towards this Nick team with their first 11 games of the season.
I was one of the people on Twitter that was like, I kind of expected the start to be kind of messy or ugly in the terms of like you're adding two new starters. Guys have to get adjusted to new roles, especially like you're seeing Julius. He has to adjust to new talent being around him, and he still likes to take a lot of the bad shots that he made last year. So like I was one of those people that was like, it's going to be messy. I didn't expect it to be like top five offense messy, but like, I'm kind of like, this is where I expected them to be.
I'll go with you next, Chip.
No, I'm happy with where they are in terms of record right now. Yeah. I mean, upset about the defense, but overall I would say I'm happy. I mean, if you could point to one negative about the Knicks season last year, it would be how they finished on the road. They were a bad road team, and right now they're have a great road record. They're 5-1 on the road. So I like that they're playing well on the road. And I mean, you have to assume eventually they'll get things figured out at the Garden. They have the best home court advantage in the NBA. So they'll start winning games at home and then they'll be okay. I'm fine with where they're at. I think eventually the defense will figure it itself out. It's a Tibbs team. And look, as long as they keep taking threes, you can't win with the three if you bizarrely just stop taking threes in the middle of the game. If you go like entire stretches without taking threes, like that's the only thing that's weirded me out, where they want to be this 3-point shooting team and then they just go stretches of not taking threes. Like I just want them to keep shooting threes and play the personnel that can shoot threes. Like Sam was talking about Grimes earlier, maybe getting Grimes some more playing time, who is a shooter, would be a smart thing to do, especially now with these injuries coming up. It may open up some time for him. So we'll see. And we saw him come in the Philly game too, and he played well. So
yeah, actually I thought the Knicks would hit the ground running, because I thought, you know, 3 out of 4 games at home. I thought, and opposite of you, Chip, I guess what you were kind of saying about the away stuff, I thought like, oh, the Knicks are going to be so good at home this year that it's going to kind of give them, you know, a lift early on, which obviously hasn't come to fruition. But I don't think anybody can be disappointed. I mean, 7-4 in the thick of it in the East, which obviously is a much improved Eastern Conference over past years now. And I think the Knicks are, you know, probably right around where most people expected them to be. People live and die with the game, so you're going to see people freaking out after losses about this is, oh, Tibbs, he can never adjust, he's this is what we always thought, like people freaking out. And then on the flip side, you see, you know, the guys at Wells Fargo Center going absolutely ballistic after beating you know, the C team of the Sixers. So like it goes, the pendulum swings back and forth. I don't think anybody can be disappointed about this so far. The only people who are mad are those Sixers that post game show, who spent that whole segment talking about the how crazy it was that the Knicks fans were excited that they beat the Sixers.
Yeah.
They're the only ones who are upset right now.
You know, first 11 games, 7-4. I kind of expected to be right around this mark. So I would say just what I kind of thought. You know, there was a couple of disappointing games, which that happens early on in the season. You know, I think there's a major overreaction when that happens. You know, we lost to the Magic a couple of Sundays ago. You would have thought that the sky has fallen.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, we were up 15 against Toronto and fell asleep and then got our asses kicked. And then, you know, they had the loss to Cleveland, where they allowed Ricky Rubio to look like a NBA Hall of Famer. And those games are obviously very frustrating and disappointing. Don't get me wrong.
They've definitely slept on teams is what they've done. They've taken certain teams lightly, like they did that with Orlando.
Yeah.
They definitely did that a little bit with Cleveland. Yeah. And I think that's something they need to stop doing, like, because the East is really, really good. Yeah, a lot better than it's been in a long time. And they need to treat every team with respect that they play.
And I think Julius recognized that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's starting to sink in. And
you heard
Julius talk about it in some of his post game comments recently. Like, even, you know, going into that game, Sixers, no Embiid, no Harris, obviously no Simmons. Yeah. You know, they're missing
Curry's
everyone.
Good.
Thibault.
Maxie. Yeah. Maxie's right. good. They you got a lot of guys who can play still. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know Sixers fans or whoever, that they're going to say, well, you just beat, you know, there was no one out there. Blah, blah, blah. But a win is a win in the NBA. Yeah. You can't control who you play. You just got to go out there and win. And
First off, I find that narrative from the broadcast of the 76ers hilarious, because when they were kicking the shit out of us, when we had the worst, like one of the worst rosters conducted in the mm-hmm. league, and they were celebrating that game, same thing could be said. Were you really celebrating when you were kicking the shit out of the Knicks? Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? Like you said, Danny, a win.
David Fizdale was writing team right. on the
exactly. on the dry erase board. Justify the behavior of the Philly sports fan.
I mean, they were like, you know, talking about how Knicks fans are like classless, or not. I don't know if they said classless, but like giving Knicks fans shit. And it's like, you know, a Philly fan threw a ball on the court at like Kemba Walker, like at the end of the game, because they were losing.
I did not hear them, you know, talking about, like I said, I was in the middle of a softball game with my AirPod in, when I was out on the field, I put it in my pocket and listening to the game, you know, as it was going on. So once it ended, I cut it off so I can, you know, kind of focus on the game. So I didn't stay with the post game, but I find that funny that, you know, they were celebrating when they beat us, what, 15 straight times. And most of those times, I mean, we were sorry as all get out, you know. So you're damn right we're gonna be excited when we took a couple from Philly. I mean, we lost 15 straight prior to it. I don't give a shit who played for the 76ers. We won. I'm celebrating it. Just the way it is.
I gotta ask a non-Knicks question. Who was at fault last night, or I guess Monday, depending on when people listen to this? Jokic or Markieff Morris?
Stop. Let me. Oh my God. No.
Morris hit him first.
Listen,
Morris hit him first.
Listen, I was on the way home today, and, you know, my radio station is a Fox Sports affiliate. So, you know, I listened to the station on the way in. So I got to listen to Cowherd in the afternoon. You know,
you don't have to. You can put whatever.
You know, I was listening to Cowherd. You know, usually I leave it on because I do like to listen to Dan Patrick. And that's right around my lunchtime where I'll go out and get something, blah, blah, blah. So I left that out, and they're talking about, and who was it? Jill Taylor. Is that her name? I think it's Jason Taylor's Joy Taylor. Yeah.
Jill Taylor. The mom from Home Improvement.
Well, you know, it started with the J. That's all I know. You know me, Chip. I barely know my own damn name, you know? So I'm listening to her, and she's going on and on about how that's Bush League and Jokic's cheap shot at him. And I'm thinking, did you not see that Morris just ran over and threw his damn elbow in Jokic's rib? If I'm Jokic, I'm doing the same damn thing. And in a split second that you react to that, do you think he's stopping and thinking, oh, his back is turned to me? No,
they were both dirty plays. Like,
they both were dirty plays, and I'm not saying Jokic did anything wrong. I mean, did something right. I get that. Like, his back was turned, and I mean, you can get like whiplash the way his head snapped back and all that. And Jokic is a pretty damn big guy. I get that. But if you're going to run up to somebody and elbow somebody in the ribs and then turn your own back to him, you're a damn fool. Sorry. I mean, if you're going to do that in a game, you better prepare for somebody to retaliate. And if you're turning your back, and that the fact that people like Joy Taylor are saying that's so Bush League and Jokic shouldn't have done that, it was a cheap shot. Did Morris not start it?
I mean, both individuals have like a history of like dirty plays. Mm-hmm. So it's like you pick who you want to, but it's like, for me, it's always who started it. And like,
they're Morris both at fault. That's, but the,
yeah, they're get, both at
to
fault.
Me,
so
to me,
like,
you can't pick one side
two,
and go,
they're two peas in a pod.
Did something wrong. Yeah. Like, Morris did so too. They're both.
Jokic,
they both did
if Jokic,
something.
Jokic doesn't hit him, if Morris doesn't hit him, so it's like.
And if you are, you don't turn your damn back. Like, you, if you hit somebody, somebody's coming back at you. If I'm on the bus and I got elbowed like that, you're damn right. I'm coming to throw something.
The thing that bothered me the most was probably the heat doing the whole fake tough guy act.
That's what,
like, don't do that. Don't do that.
First off, they ain't fighting.
Like, their fans,
they're not fighting.
Probably the players too have this delusion in their head. Like, if we weren't basketball players, we'd be MMA fighters.
They think that like Udonis Haslam is fucking John Wick. Yeah. That he's gonna come in and just kill everyone. It's so ridiculous the way they see the guys on their team.
The Morris brothers themselves are tough. I get that they are tough. I'm not trying to say anything, but they got into a fight at a bar with like this individual. I guess they were talking about the Morris's brother, and people are like, "Oh, there's the badass people." We don't know what the hell happened. They could have cheap shot of that guy, like, you know, in a 2-on-1, like things like that. They weren't fighting. They're not fighting.
That's the main thing that you take away from this. No
Jimmy
one's fighting.
Jimmy Butler is not fighting anyone.
No. Did you see Tyler Hero?
One of the best quotes.
That man looked like he was thinking about going apeshit on Jokic and then realized this is a bad idea. He has me outweighed by like 60 pounds, maybe even more than that. No. Like, he started like he was going to do some real MMA shit, right? And then said, okay, wait, I should wait for my boys.
One of the best NBA quotes ever.
One of the best NBA quotes ever was when Lonzo Ball, somebody asked him about like why he like didn't get into it when there was like I don't even remember who they're playing. There was some kind of scuffle at midcourt, and Lonzo just like walked away. And so somebody asked him about it, and he was like, "Man, nobody's fighting in the NBA. Like, I'm not trying to get attacked."
Exactly.
It's like, what are you like? No, everyone's just doing that fake tough. It's like, he's like, listen, he knows exactly what's going on.
But the whole narrative, though, is like, all I've seen today is Jokic cheap shot, and then
as the day went on, I saw a lot more like people Richard Jefferson, like a lot of people were coming out and basically.
Well, I think after you hear that so often, you're going, wait a minute, like, why do we always seem to ignore what happened beforehand? It's always like, even in the NBA,
didn't go down. He just got hit and he kind of like took it, and it was a hard hit. But if you just watch straight up without like instant replay and zooming in, it looks like Jokic took like a, you know, just like a little elbow, like not too hard.
Derrick Henry'd him. That's
it. And then he destroyed him, which is not the case if you actually watch it. But, you know, if you just casually watch the clip, you're like, oh, damn, Jokic went off.
First, again, if you're going to do that, why turn your back? Like, do you think you're going to elbow Jokic and then he's not going to do anything?
I don't know. But like, Jimmy Butler has the date game circled on the schedule. So the Nuggets better be prepared for that one.
We'll see. I mean, because they got their asses kicked yesterday. I think that was also a part that played into it, because they looked like crap. Well, it's one game. Don't get me wrong. Miami's really good. I'm not one of those that read one into it. But I think that plays a part of it. That it was just a frustrating night. They were down 23 before, you know, even the half, and it kind of just stayed around that point. But I just found it funny, like listening to some that, and I'm not even defending Jokic. Let me. Back up a little bit here. That, like we said, they're both at fault. But you know, Danny, you about cause something here. Like I was that weirdo today, screaming at the radio driving down the highway. Like,
you're screaming at Colin Cowherd.
Yeah, I had a nerve.
Yeah, I was screaming at the radio. Yes, yeah. So I'm glad you kind of brought that up. But if I could now steer it back into the Knicks direction. Here, next game, we always take to look ahead a little bit. So the next game we got, the Knicks are coming to Charlotte on Friday, but I got to work. Dang it. I'm calling a game Friday night, so I'm not going to be able to get there. But the next game, though, is against the Bucks tomorrow night, defending champions. We beat them a couple of, last Friday, and we were getting our butts kicked early on in that game. Didn't look too good. And I wasn't too thrilled with the way that they opened that game. But, of course, they turned it around, went on the run, beat the Bucks. But, Sam, I'm going to start with you. Just an overall outlook. Can the Knicks make it 2 in a row against the Bucks, or do they kind of even it up? I know the Bucks have some guys out. I don't know if Chris Middleton is still on that COVID list or not.
He's on the COVID list for tonight's game, which is, I guess we're recording this on Tuesday. So he's out with that. And then Brooke Lopez has lower back soreness. So we'll see how they are for Wednesday night.
All right. So Sam, the outlook that you have, how do you see this game going? Can the Knicks make it 2-0 against the Bucks?
Well, one thing that sticks out to me is Nerlens being out, and Nerlens was one of the key factors in that last game in terms of, like, he really disrupted the Milwaukee ball handlers. Like, he caused a lot of deflections. He's the one that got the Knicks back, like, getting into transition, getting them easy buckets. So, like, if he's out, I wonder how much of a factor, especially if him and Mitch are both out, how much of a factor that is in, like, how we defend Giannis and the Milwaukee ball handlers, because I feel like he was really instrumental in our defensive strategy in, like, that game. And, like, I don't think we win that game without him, honestly. So it's going to be very interesting to see how we go about it. And then you obviously just hope everyone else has it going.
Yeah, I tend to think with this game, like, Giannis is probably that loss probably didn't sit well with him. I mean, I know he's got a championship, he's got a couple MVPs, but he doesn't seem like the type who likes to lose any game. So I would imagine Giannis is going to come into MSG and try and put on a show. I wouldn't bet against the Bucks is all I'd say.
Yeah, I think Giannis loves beating the big market teams, not just the Knicks, but like the Lakers, all of us. Yeah, and the Knicks are actually favored. I was just looking at the line. They're 2.5-point favorites right now, which is kind of surprising to me. But I guess that's the Middleton being out and Lopez and stuff. But that could change by the time this podcast comes out.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff is so fluid this year with, like, the health and safety protocols and, you know, guys going in and out of the lineup. And even, you know, who knows, Noel or Mitch, one of the two of them could be good to go for the game. It's kind of like a touch and go thing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the way I look about this game, you know, of course, the Bucks are 4-6 coming into their game tonight. Not surprised to see them kind of off to a little bit of a slow start. You coming off a championship. Sometimes that happens the next year. You know, you're kind of still I don't want to say spinning your wheel. I'm trying to find the words for it, but basically, you know what I mean? We see championship teams come out, you know, coming off that championship high, and then they struggle early on type thing. But again, that's another team by Christmas, I think we'll start putting it into high gear and turning it into the other direction. And then you got the Knicks, who have been right where I thought they would be at this point. You know, with their record wise, kind of like we talked about early on. But, you know, both teams really haven't found their groove yet. You don't see that typically early on anyway. You know, a few teams are jumping out of the gate fast, like the Golden State Warriors, for example, who I don't want to have Chris on, by the way, Chip, because we're going to have to talk about that over and under. And you remember he went with the over on the Warriors total. And I think I told him he was crazy. It's not happening. And, yeah,
they've almost got
it. Hot, right? You know, so I don't want to have to own up to that it looks like I'm way wrong on that. But, you know, it's just one of those games.
You can call him out for him saying the T-Wolves were going to be a borderline playoff team. Like,
that's right. That's right. He did say that. He did say that. Yep. But back to this game, I think both teams obviously not into their groove. I think you said it. We're early favorite into this game. I think it's a winnable game, but you know, if Giannis comes out and looks like Giannis, and by the way, even Giannis was hitting some 3-pointers. I know really early on in that game, if Giannis is going to hit 3-pointers, like, how the hell do you stop him? Right? Like, that's a scary thing when he's hitting that 3-point. You don't have a prayer. So hopefully, you know, he's not shooting like that in this game, but I look at it as winnable. You know, it's going to be up for grabs. We'll have our opportunities. I think it just comes down to, you know, defending that perimeter. And, you know, we're a team that's shooting a lot of three balls. We hit threes, we're going to win. If we're not shooting well that night, we don't really have that defense in tune yet like last year. Last year, we won a lot of ugly basketball games because our defense just was lights out. This year, so far early on, it's been more about, you know, our ability to shoot the three ball, and defense has not really carried us through quite yet. So hopefully that kind of turns around. But it's going to be a good game. Looking forward to it tomorrow night. But now it's time, of course, for the last call segment. Anybody else have anything else they want to add on? Would now be the time to kind of go over anything that we may have missed here. And then I know there was something that I wanted to bring up for this. And of course, just because it's just been that kind of day of going so many different directions, slipped out of my head. So I'm going to try to think about what I wanted to bring. I don't even know if it was even Nick related.
College basketball is back. I'll bring that up. That's Danny, Danny, you should plug all the stuff that you've been writing.
So over the weekend, I had a MAC Metro Athletic Atlanta Conference preview, which is very mid-major on the small major side. But it's like all like the local, like St. Peter's, Iona, teams like that. Those teams get started today. Then I had a Big East preview that came out today. I did a preseason rankings for the local schools. And tomorrow I'll have a little quick preview on Rutgers because I wasn't doing a whole Big 12 or Big 10 preview because I did not feel like researching like Purdue and Iowa and like looking into that. But yeah, a lot of college hoop stuff over at EliteSportsNY.com. And then I'll obviously keep you still doing my Knicks and Nets stuff, but been into the college stuff for, you know, just getting started here. Always exciting.
And you can gamble in New York now.
Yes. Soon. It's not, I don't think they're live yet, but
not yet.
It should be soon. And you can gamble in Jersey on the hoop stuff, but you can't bet on Jersey team or Jersey college team still. No Rutgers, no St. Peter's. No games that are in Jersey, so that's too bad. But I don't bet a lot on college basketball anyway. I always get killed doing it, so it's not worth it.
Future bets are the only way to make money there.
Yeah. But I think that's all we have today for the Knicks State of Mind podcast.
Why don't you plug your podcast, Sam?
Yeah, I was gonna do that actually at the end. So. That works. Give us that plug.
I've been kind of slow with the episodes because, you know, life happens.
Right. Yes, trust me. I know.
But I try to keep like a semi consistent of like a week every week to every 2 weeks. And I bring on a guest, usually a friend from Twitter that I see talking hoops. And, you know, I just bring them on, talk about the NBA, what's going on the last week or so. Yeah, and we have a good time, you know. It's really laissez-faire. No, not a lot of structure to it, but, you know, somewhat of a structure. So you can follow the Twitter at FBL NBA Pod. And I guess you can follow me at FBL _ Sam. I just don't tweet about sports. I tweet about a wide range of topics and a whole bunch of other stuff. So there's that.
That's
a good follow.
Sam's a great follow on Twitter. Yeah. Everybody follow Sam.
That's
on
a good follow. A wide range of. See, my social media is just me.
It's just you yelling about the Knicks. Yeah. And the Jets. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
That's all I have it for. Like, that's it. Like, I do nothing else with it. Nothing else. Just the vent.
If you want to hear somebody who, like, during baseball season will be like, fire Boone. Or
I hate Boone.
Yeah.
I can't stand
I'm with like, you there on
like, I can't stand Boone. I can't stand Cashman either. Don't even.
I'm with you there on
Danny, you're
too.
Trying to get me to yell.
No, I'm pressing your buttons tonight.
I'll tell you. Yeah. I say that all the time. People are like, what do you do with social media? I just vent. I just vent my frustration. Well, sometimes I put stuff on there that I don't even mean. I just put it out there. Like
Danny, Jesus, what the hell you got?
I was not trying to do this. So.
I don't even want to think about baseball till March. Okay, I know free agency is going on, but I don't want to think about baseball.
Well, at least Sam Darnold sucks. We don't. I
tweeted about that. Yeah. That was my one. Yeah. He still sucks.
Your only happiness comes from other people's failures.
Exactly. I'm a sick guy. I don't know, but Sam, thank you again for joining us. And
thanks for having me.
Make sure to check out his podcast. Give him a follow on Twitter. It's much better than mine. It's much better. No, not a whole lot of venting on his side. But with that being said, let's wrap it up. And we'll be back soon with another episode of the Knicks State of Mind podcast.